listeners. I am so glad you could join us today. My name is Lois Richter, and this program is called That's Life. And today it's going to be called That's French. Well, not really, but I am going to interview my friend Gitane, who speaks French fluently. In fact, that was her first language, and she is a very nice person. She has translated old documents for me. She has a radio show on KDRT. She does wonderful work with people. So with no further ado, may I introduce to you Gitane.
Merci bien.
And because I don't speak French, you'll hopefully translate when you say something in French so we can understand what you said.
Well, I'm glad to translate what I just said, merci bien. It's a way of saying thank you, merci, which would be sufficient in itself. But people often say that sort of as a matter of fact without really meaning it. Saying merci bien takes two words and it requires more attention so that that's my way of saying I'm really saying thank you. I'm not just saying, repeating a phrase that is common.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Bien means good.
Good. So thank you, good. So is that a common French thing to say that, or is that your particular take on merci?
I don't know, but I know that it's a way of accentuating that I'm really saying thank you.
It's so like saying thank you very much.
Yes, and you make eye contact and you look at the person, and so you're really saying I really am thankful for you to have done what you did or said what you did, which is different from just a phrase that is just in passing.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, how are you, and goodbye, and yeah. Things like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about you and being French or speaking French or whatever you know about French. So I'm going to ask you a first question, which is, I know that there are French people in France. I've heard Paris mentioned as a place where French people hang out. And then I've heard that there's a French Canadian community which speaks French. I also heard, and I'm not sure if it's modern or ancient, is there a French component in New Orleans?
Yes, oui, there is. And the French spoken differs depending on the locales, shall we say.
Is there another large French population that you're familiar with?
I know there are, but I don't know where they are. Je ne sais pas.
Je ne sais pas, which means I don't know?
I don't know.
Je ne sais pas. I should learn.
Four words.
Je ne
sais pas. That's often the case in French is that not always, but nearly always, it requires more words to say what one wants to say. And it brings more specificity, if you will. It's like, I'm really saying, I don't really know that.
But even though it's more words, you spit them out so fast, it doesn't take any longer time. Sometimes it's shorter. French seems to be a very fast language. Do you find that French is faster than English?
Not at all. On the contrary, even though some people speak any language, including French, at the speed of light itself and then some, at which point I say, I know that you might have said something quite interesting or valuable or informative, yet at the same time, could you please say it again and say it more slowly? Un peu plus lentement, s'il vous plaît. Lentement means slow. Slow down.
Okay, and s'il vous plaît means please?
Pardon?
S'il vous plaît, does that mean please?
Yes, s'il vous plaît means please.
Well,
it's using the words, but also knowing how to have an accent that is as close to the original form as what you would like it to be so that it's easier to understand what you say.
So what I said, it wasn't that easy to understand?
Yes, it was.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yes.
So
I got it.
Good. So of those possible French locations, where did you learn French and how did you learn French?
French was the language my parents spoke to me. And when I went to school, I went to French school, so we spoke French.
Mm-hmm.
And I read profusely as a youngster, as I always have, but particularly as a youngster. And so I read what were perhaps the French classics, I don't know for sure, and proceeded to have quite a library of French books, which were unfortunately lost. But nonetheless, I read voraciously, shall we say.
So you grew up speaking French. When did you switch to speaking English?
When I moved to Santa Monica and everybody spoke English except me.
Wow. So how old were you when you learned English?
I don't
know. Did you learn it in school?
I did to some degree, because when we went to l'école secondaire, secondary school, or high school as it's called in America, one is expected to also read in English. And I remember my teacher, my ninth grade, was insistent that I should read in English because that was necessary. And I thought to myself, I read voraciously and always in French, and I read poets and philosophers, and I'm very happy with my reading. So she said, and I remember her saying that, read anything, read Cinderella. And I thought, that sounds so uninteresting to me. But I was also working in a library on the weekends, and part of my task was putting books back on the shelves. And as I was putting books on the shelf, I picked up a book titled Paris, or Paris Underground. And because the first word was Paris, I thought, it caught my interest. And I looked at the book and somehow it just caught on, and I borrowed the book and I read it, and that was the first book I read in English, and my teacher had difficulty believing me because it was not Cinderella, it was not a children's book, it was a fairly thick book about two women who smuggled soldiers who needed to get back to England somehow. That's how I remember it. And maybe they smuggled them in a small car, and maybe it was a Volkswagen. Maybe. Je ne sais pas. Je ne me rappelle pas exactement. I don't remember exactly, but I remember the book, Paris Underground.
So do you find it problematic in English when there are French words that we have borrowed and then we don't pronounce the same way you do? So Paris, you say Paris.
Paris.
There's an S in there. Why don't you say Paris?
Because that would feel foreign to me. Mais Paris, that sounds familiar to me. That seems to be, it comes naturally. And rolling the R is very French. Paris or Paris. Paris is Paris, la ville de Paris. So
there's no way that I'm going to learn French, but I'm curious about a few things. Paris, which ends in IS. Mm-hmm. Merci, which ends in I. Are all words that ends in IS pronounced E at the end?
I don't know about all. I know there are some rules and then there are some exceptions. And it seems to me that the French language and people in general specialize in having unusual kind of things added. So I don't know. And so some things, one follows certain rules, and some things, some are just need to be learned by a person along the way, so with someone, either with reading, but more so with listening, having a good listening ear. And also, I was rereading or looking at a book that I have that everybody knows called Le Petit Prince, The Little Prince by Saint-Exupéry. And the translation is really very fine. And yet there is a page where it says, it's such a secret place, the land of tears. It's such a secret place. And yet in the French version, the same word is, c'est tellement mystérieux, le pays des larmes, which means it's so mysterious. And I don't know why the translation doesn't use the word mysterious, because there's something different about the what is suggested when you hear the word le mystère. Si c'est vraiment mystérieux, it's mysterious, versus it's not secret, it's just mysterious, it's complex.
Mysterious is you don't know. Secret is somebody knows but isn't telling.
Yes, it has a, it's subtle, and yet it has a different meaning. And I'm not faulting the translation. On the contrary, I've admired the translation before, because I have the book. Actually, I have four copies of the books, and I couldn't find two of them.
What language was it originally written in?
En français, in French.
In French, okay.
And that's how I read it originally and many, many times. Le Petit Prince, de Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. And it changes the meaning ever so slightly. Mm-hmm. Its secret does suggest, and I'm not telling you, and I'm not telling anybody, versus it's mysterious. However, I might like to talk about it if you're interested in finding out.
But you don't know.
You don't know, but it is suggested in the language that one uses.
Right. Yes. I see the difference. Yes, I see the difference.
Good. Good.
Well, you've been rattling off these names, and I'm assuming that they're names of authors, but I don't know.
Well, the book Le Petit Prince, translated The Little Prince, is fairly well known. Mm-hmm. And many people have read it. And it looks like a children's book. And from day on, when I first read it, I thought this is the best psychology book that there is. Because it talks about everything. It speaks about communication. It speaks about death and dying. It really addresses a number of circumstances that come through life that can lead to questions and wondering versus, yeah, that's very nice, but I don't need to read that because it's a children's book. It's not a children's book. I read it first when I was a young adolescent, and I have read it a number of times in the course of my life, and I will read it again. Mm-hmm. Because it is such a thorough review of what is life and what our relationships all about.
There I guess you. I'll have to read it now.
Le Petit Prince de Antoine de Saint-Exupéry.
Okay, now you said The Little Prince, and then you said some other phrase. What does that mean?
The author's name is Antoine de of Saint-Exupéry. Saint-Exupéry. I don't know how to say that in English.
Okay, so that's the author.
I have read many of his books, always in French, of course.
Of course. Well, let's get back to you. And so do the French schools teach English as a regular thing, or was that special to that one teacher?
I don't know what it does now, because this may come as a shock to you, but I'm a tad moving on in years, shall we say?
That's reasonable. So am I.
So school age is quite a long time ago, but it was happening in all French schools because we lived in a country where both languages were spoken.
That being Canada.
Yes. And okay. Unfortunately, even in Canada, I get the impression that many people have been anglicized and speak a combination of French and English, or use a lot of terminology that is English. I don't know that for sure, and I don't have figures to show that, but...
And when you say anglicized, you mean made English?
Yes, yes.
Okay. That's not a word that I would use here, but then, of course, we're Americans, so we wouldn't be anglicized. We might be Americanized?
Yes, probably.
Mm-hmm. I think of Anglican as the Church of England.
I see.
So that's where that I have to stop and think about it. If it's anglicized, that means you're not Catholic or you're not Baptist or you're no, that just means English speaking. Okay.
I find it fascinating. I listen to people speak their language, whatever it is, and I don't always know recognize what it is. I often don't know. But they are fluent and they are expressing thoughts and ideas and feelings, and they do it all in a language that I have no idea what it says. And it's very interesting because on my computer, if I switch to French and I forget to switch it back to English, I write something which makes a lot of sense in English, makes no sense whatsoever when it's written in French. And when I attempt to write it in English, it doesn't make any sense. It's very interesting. And so I have a high respect for people who speak many languages.
Mm-hmm.
I speak two, and I did study Latin for 4 years. And we did some translations at some point, Romulus et Remus, and their stories. But I never spoke it as a language because it's not a language that is regularly spoken.
It's not spoken except in churches, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. But being able to read Latin might be helpful.
Yes, yes.
Is there a French church?
I don't know that. And I would wonder about... you know, what language they do speak and what ideas they profess. I would be more interested in their philosophy than I would be in how they speak the language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering, because French is spoken in so many different places, I was wondering if, like, French people are Catholic or French people are Baptist or have a particular affinity to certain religions?
I can't answer that, but I know that the tendency is to follow the religion that was taught to us as children, mm-hmm. and then possibly to question that religion and shift or move to some other perspective that works for individuals. So whether we are originally speaking one language or another, we all have the capacity to slow down at some point and say, now, wait a minute, how does that work for me? And does it fit for me?
Wait a minute. You're saying language, but you're really talking about religion, aren't you?
I'm talking about ideas of any sort, including religious ideas.
Okay. So, you moved to the U.S.?
Yes.
From where?
From La Ville de Montréal, Montreal. I lived in Montreal for a while, and I loved living there. It is it was a city that was French, had a lot of French theater, also had some English theater, and was known for its restaurants. So I liked living there, and at the time, an opportunity came up. I was married, and we, as a couple, moved to Santa Monica.
Uh-huh. So Montreal is a city in what state or what province?
Dans le Québec, in the Québec.
Québec, okay. And you say Québec? Québec.
Oui. And okay. That's something that people who learn French or would like to speak French with more more ownership of the language, they could review their vowels or their numbers, like A, E, I, O, U, E, E. That's in French. In English would be A, E, I, O, U. And so when people read something in French, but their background is English, they tend to use the vowels as if they are of the English language.
Right.
So it can be helpful to say, well, that's good for the English language. It's pronounced differently, like the letter A, ah, is ah in French. That's why my name is Gitane.
Well, doesn't it have multiple pronunciations? I know in English, the letter A can be a whole lot of different things.
Could well be, but it often is pronounced as a une voyelle, a vowel. It's A, A-E-I-O-U.
Well, that's the name of it. That's not how you pronounce it.
Well, that's how I hear people often pronouncing.
Yeah.
It's interesting that, for example, my name is Gitane, and with an A pronounced A, and a lot of people I've heard say, oh, I'll never be able to say your name right, or I don't know how to say your name. And children have never had any problems.
Well, if you say it and I try and echo what you say and don't worry about what it's spelled like, I'll be fine.
Yes.
The biggest problem I have is that what you say and what I see written on a page have no relationship to each other as far as I'm concerned. And it's like if I tried to not having heard it, just pronounce what I see in front of me on the page, I will use an American vocabulary or American phonemes. And yes. So I'll get it wrong.
And that explains a little bit to me why children always pronounce my name correctly, because they have very little preconceived notions yet.
And they probably don't spell anyway.
True. And they may not write they're not looking to write my name. They just say, oh, hello, Gitane.
Mm-hmm.
Because it comes naturally to them.
And they've heard it before they've seen it written. That also helps.
Yes, yes.
If I have heard your name, and then later on I see that it's written, I'll go, oh, that's how it's written. So if I say my name is Lois Richter, but you haven't seen Richter spelled, then when you finally do see R-I-C-H-T-E-R, oh, that's how that's spelled, you know?
I may put a K, for example, because it sounds like right to me, but it may not be correct.
And it actually, if you actually were to hear it as a German word, it would be Richter. It wouldn't be a hard K, it would be a soft K. But there is no such thing in the American language. So we just say Richter.
We repeat what we have heard at least when we have developed a perspective, mm-hmm. It would seem. I don't like to make statements that suggest that this is the way it always is, because somebody will come up with X number of variations on a theme. But I'm very glad that I was raised in French. I speak French. I can read French. I understand French. And sometimes those are the first words that come to my attention. And then I say, how do I say that in English? And I have to give some thought to it. Sometimes it's automatic, but sometimes it's not. And I've read a great deal in French, and I think that helped also, as I have also read a lot in English, because that helps a person know many, many words and how they are used.
Mm-hmm. I have found an interesting technique for learning a written language. is to have one page in that language and the other page in your language, but have the paragraphs. So if this takes up this much, then there's that, and that takes up less, there's some blank space, so that, so it's side by side. And yeah, it, you may not understand the idiom, because there's a lot of times when we will use a phrase for something,
yes,
that you might use a word for, or vice versa. And the connotation of the words might be slightly different. So someone might translate mysterious as secret. You know, it's a possibility. But if I'm learning it, I'm going to learn mysterious is secret, you know, because that's what's on the page. And yes. Yeah.
And for me, when I read Le Petit Prince and it talks about c'est mystérieux le pays des larmes, oh my gosh, that says so much to me about how we come to conclusions drawn or based on very little information. We tend to make decisions or draw conclusions about people rather than say, oh, tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I hear you. Because le pays des larmes, it's like, I don't know how to I can translate that in English, but I don't know how to translate it so that it has the same oomph, shall we
what
say.
Does it, what did you say?
Le pays, the land of tears.
Land of tears.
It's
a sad place?
It means what whatever feelings people have, whether they bring tears of joy or tears of sadness or anxiety, or there's always more to what they are saying and what it means to them. Instead of what does it mean to me, instead of drawing conclusions, it is always good to say, oh, that's mysterious to me. I don't understand. I'd like to understand. I wonder if the person would be willing to tell me more. Versus,
that's heavy, man. That is so heavy.
But that, you know, that's what happens in so many instances, whether it's because of English and French or just in English, is that people draw conclusions so fast that they interrupt people who would like to talk about, here's how it is for me at this moment. Mm-hmm. Le pays de mes larmes, the land of my tears, or the land of my laughter, or the land of my doubt, or the land of my uncertainty. Would you be willing to hear me? Is a question that very few people know to ask, instead of saying, well, in answer to your question, and now we're meeting the other person's needs, instead of if somebody said, how are you doing today? Then it's good to think, oh, somebody's interested in me. So I get to talk about me. And very soon we're talking about the other person who says, well, you know, you shouldn't feel so bad because, well, yeah, you may be correct. But the fact is, for me at this moment, I feel sad, or I feel angry, or I feel joyful, or whatever I feel, are you interested in hearing what has led me to feel this way, instead of drawing conclusions?
I don't see that as a dichotomy. Drawing conclusions or wanting to hear someone's story. There's two separate different things, but they're not either or.
Well, often in people's conversation, the attention shifts to the other person.
Right. It does shift back and forth. Hopefully.
And quite often the message that is given to the person number one, shall we say, who was asked, how are you doing today? Their impression is that somebody's interested in them.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon we're talking about the other person Or they're telling the other person, well, I had the same problem last year, and here's how I solved it, and you should do the same.
I'm not quite sure how we got onto the theories of communication versus talking about friendship. Right?
Well, let's get back to friendship. That's fine by me. J'aime bien vous parler en français. I love speaking to you or with you in French.
Do you find that you miss speaking to people in French?
Oui, yes, I do.
And have you found a group of people who are French speaking that you can speak with?
Only occasionally. More often I hear people say, I took some French in high school, but I can't speak it or I don't know it. And now and then there's someone who sounds like they really know. For example, I fairly recently went to a little bakery here in town, and I said, un croissant, s'il vous plaît, régulier. And the person said, oh, you want un croissant régulier? And I could tell by they knew what I said because they were saying it in a French way. And so they were understanding me.
What was that? You were going to translate what you said when you said French. What did you say? Un croissant what?
Un croissant régulier. Regular. I don't want a chocolate, or I don't want it with meat, or fromage.
A croissant, a regular croissant.
A regular
croissant. Yeah.
Yes, but I wouldn't say it that way. I would say I'm in a French shop.
Well, of course, I'm just trying to get it so that it's in my English, so that I understand what you're saying. You would say that, and I would say I want a plain croissant because yes. I'm American, and that's what I speak. But I interrupted you. You have a person there in front of you who's speaking French to you.
Yes, I was so delighted because he repeated what I wanted in a way that said to me, this person has used this terminology before. Mm-hmm. It's flowing from them. And I've seen the fellow again a couple of times. I don't know him well. I don't know his history, but at the same time, it's very pleasing to me. Mm-hmm. It's not a judgment of negativity of any sort. It's just that when someone speaks and they sound like they might be able to speak a little or a lot of French, I feel joyful and honored and delighted that maybe I can have a bit of a conversation with that.
And a comfort of having something from your childhood come.
Yes. Yes.
Now, have you found that the students who are studying French at the university actually speak French? Have you tried any of those?
I don't know, but I've had some clients a long time ago who were expected to translate from French some very hard text without necessarily understanding very much or knowing much French. And I thought, this doesn't seem to be terribly practical for them.
No.
Because there's a whole paragraph, a long one, and I can help them decipher the first sentence because that's enough to get the accent and to pronounce appropriately. Mm. So I don't know what is taught at the university. My style of teaching is to be very practical. Like I've taught French to people who may go to France or Gay Paris or some part of France for some short period of time, a few weeks or their work takes them there a few months and they would like to feel like they're more connected. Mm-hmm. And it's good to have a few words And it's okay to have an accent, and it's okay to know the difference in how a word is pronounced. And it makes it easier. Like A-N-A-N is usually on. And so if you see a word with français, F-R-A-N, you probably have an on. Pronunciation, the Francais.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't thinking of your teaching at the university, teaching French. I was just thinking that that might have been a group that you got your fix with, that you got out and spoke French with. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't know. Never mind. I was going to ask if they taught French in Davis High School, but I won't, because you wouldn't know. You're not a high school teacher.
No, but when I go to the same shop that I talked about, I know the proprietor, and he speaks beautiful French. He is married to a French woman, and he has lived in Gay Paris, or Paris, for a while, and he speaks beautifully. So I savor saying a few words with him, even if it's just a few. I don't know him well personally, but at the same time, it's very clear that speaking with him is no difficulty for him, and it makes it smoother and easier for me.
And it makes you smile.
Yes, it does.
So let's teach the listeners a couple of words in French that they can use. How about please and thank you?
Thank you is merci.
Merci, not merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, but with the accent on merci.
Merci. Merci. Okay.
There's no hurry about it. S'il vous plaît is please. So that's
play. That sounds like if you please. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly what it means. If you please.
S'il vous plaît.
It's a little. The French language takes into consideration sentiments and feelings and role in life, position in life. Whether a person is younger or their age or elder. And so, for example, in French, it's good to know the difference between tu and vous. Vous is more respectful. Bonjour, madame. Ça me fait plaisir de vous connaître. Vous connaître, to know you. Vous is respectful of you until you say it's fine to call me tu. It is translated as tutoyer, but it one waits until one is given permission. One has respect for elders or people who have some position in life.
So would it be the equivalent of, or the difference between, you're calling the person Mrs., which is Madame, or you're calling the person by her first name? Would that be where the difference between vous and tu would come?
Oh, it would be the difference. It's like, it's not assuming a measure of friendliness that might come later, but it's without assumptions.
So if you're talking to me and you address me as Mrs. Richter, and I say, no, just call me Lois, then that gives you permission to be more less formal.
Yes.
Okay. Correct. Right. So back to s'il vous plaît.
S'il vous plaît.
S'il vous plaît. Yes. Do you say that before or after your request? So is it, may I have a cup of coffee, s'il vous plaît, or s'il vous plaît, may I have a cup of coffee?
Yes, to the question, it could go either way.
Either way. Okay. Well, that's why we ask these things. All right. And
but
then
begin by, s'il vous plaît, if it pleases you. You're asking for a cup of coffee, so you're in a restaurant, perhaps, and you expect them to deliver a cup of coffee. But at the same time, it's graceful. It's very graceful to say, s'il vous plaît, une tasse de thé, une tasse de café, un café au lait, peut-être.
And you're going to translate what you just said.
Une tasse de café, a cup of coffee. Une tasse de thé, a cup of tea, or whatever I said there, or a café au lait, which means a café au lait. I don't know how to say that in English.
I don't either. I don't know what it is. Okay, so
it's half coffee, half milk.
Oh, okay. So in American, I would say, please, may I have a cup of coffee? And what I heard you say is, please, cup of coffee. Is that right?
Yes, but I could also have said, je voudrais une tasse de thé ou une tasse de café.
But you didn't. I mean, when you were just talking, that wasn't usual.
Language, especially if somebody is not fluent in the language, it's good for them to be simple and specific. Un café, s'il vous plaît. S'il vous plaît, un café.
Okay. So, please and thank you. And then ordering tea or coffee, this is all good. How would you recommend someone learn French if they would like to do that? There's a lot of these... on your phone, you can say, you put in a phrase and it tells you what to say. Or you can go to the adult school here in town and they have human beings that can teach you things. Or there's books and there's other methods. What would you recommend to an adult who wanted to learn enough French to be polite when they go to Gay Paris?
I would recommend that they read, and particularly that they talk with someone, because when talking, you really learn. Because, and especially if you're speaking with someone who speaks the language a little bit more than you, or who is a native French person, they will know more likely where to amplify the word and where to put the accent. And so there's more that is learned from speaking with or listening to and then speaking with that person than there is reading, even though many people know how to read, but they don't know how to speak.
I would consider it two separate languages, because when you read in your head, you are reading in your own language's phonemes. You know, I am not going to know that it's Paris, not Paris, if I'm reading in a book and I'm only reading and I haven't heard it. And then when you hear something, it has no relationship to what you read. You know, it just sounds so different than the letters are, because it's French letters instead of American letters. So if I actually was going to have to talk, then I think learning it by talking works. Now, if I was just going to be writing letters, let's say I'm going to do some genealogy research and I'm going to write letters to France, well, then that's different.
Certainly, if you want to be more fluent and more familiar with the language, it requires that people have conversation and do a lot of listening, and then duplicating what they hear or checking it out. Oh, is that how you say Paris? Is that how you roll your R? How do you do that? Because it doesn't come naturally necessarily. And there are many languages. I have a Chinese teacher who he still speaks with a little bit of an accent. And there are some things in which he can pronounce, and it's like, that's not familiar to me. It comes from Chinese. And so it's good to listen and say, Let me see if I have it somewhat correctly. Not perfect, by the way. I plan to be, this is me speaking, I plan to be perfect in my next lifetime if I have one.
And well, bored, then that's because you'll be born in America.
and I'll be bored and boring.
Oh, wait a minute. That was uncalled for.
Well, I'm saying that being perfect is may not be a healthy kind of focus.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. It's not a judgment of any sort.
So you are speaking French, and you grew up in Quebec.
Quebec.
Quebec. And if I were to hear someone from, I don't know, New Orleans or Paris, or would it be very different? Is the writing different and the pronunciation a different accent, or is the writing also different?
The pronunciation would be different, and possibly the writing as well. It depends on how far the patois has evolved.
The patois?
Patois. I don't remember the English word for
dialect. Patois.
Dialect, yes.
Okay.
So it varies a lot. For example, I've said this, I've told this story before. I was at a dinner that was pre-pandemic, of course, when I went places, and someone came to me and said, "You have to meet the person next to me. She's from France." And I thought, "Oh, okay, that sounds good." So at some moment, I went and I said, "Bonjour." And the moment that person opened her mouth, I knew she came from the south of France. Mm-hmm. And when I checked it out, for sure, I was correct, because people from a certain area of, and that the south of France, they speak as if it's bubbles. There's a joyfulness about, a lightness of spirit that is very obvious. So even in La France, La Belle France, if you speak Parisian French or theater French, you might be making sounds that are very delightful to the ear. When you come from the south of France, you might... it might have a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
Except I can still understand her.
Oh, that's good.
It's like a lift.
Let me guess. They get champagne down there, don't they?
I don't know, but maybe it's like that. It's like, ooh, bubbles, bubbles.
Yeah.
Yes. But I also have a very good ear for music, even though I'm not a musician. I don't play any instrument, but I love music and sounds, and I'm tuned into sounds. So the better, for example, when I first learned English, I spoke with a slightly British accent.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss it because I've lost that. And there's something purer about the English accent. So I miss it.
Well, you know, you can get it back.
I could, and
just listen to the BBC on your computer or your radio or whatever, and you get it back if you heard it, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. It would come easily because, for example, if I speak French with someone and then I change to English, there is a nanosecond when I'm speaking with a French accent.
You're always speaking with a French accent, dear. No, seriously, I can hear your voice anywhere and we'll know, oh, yep, that's Chetan, she's French.
Well, it would have.
At least I assume the accent is French.
I would have a more accented accent for a few seconds, and then I slip into what I speak, which is whatever it is that people hear. And I remember when I spoke English, and an is en, like France, like it is in French. And when I said, I love to dance, I was made fun of because what
well,
do you
it isn't. It isn't on. It's there's lots of different ways. Like Titan, it's an. Chance, dance. They're an, not on. You know,
on is more pleasing to my ear, so I tend
That's
to
fine.
Go back to that language because.
So then you say it in French, dance, right?
Dance. I love to dance. Yes.
Yeah.
So.
You, in your professional life, talk a lot about philosophy and emotions and communication and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Do you find that you draw upon your French heritage in that, or is it just your personal experiences and training and things? Do you? I guess my question is, I've always heard that French people are more emotional than English speakers. I don't know if that's true or not. I have a feeling that we fall into a lot of stereotypes, and I don't want to do that. But do you find in your work that being French helps you?
It helps me in this manner that when people say, how do you say this word in French or in, and sometimes there is another word, like if you say, how do you say table in French? Sur la table, table, table. That's the word for table. Okay. It's written the same way. But there are times when people are looking for a word and I say, just describe the action or the activity. Because you paint a picture of what it is that you want to talk about. And it's much more artistic. And it doesn't require that you remember the word.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not trying to be effective or efficient. It's just trying to be descriptive.
Hmm. And do you think that that's...
The example I gave you about... The word, c'est mystérieux, le pays des larmes. Oh my gosh, that says so much. And when I read it in English, I say, it says, it's close to the same thing, but it's lacking some oomph. And I don't know how to translate the word oomph.
So there's no French word for oomph?
I don't know. There's a richness in the wording that tells me more and gives me more information. C'est mystérieux, le pays des larmes. The pays is I could translate it as country, and then I say, but it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me, well, what's different? And I say, I don't know, but something's different.
Mm-hmm.
The pays is suggests the whole countryside.
The place.
Yeah, but it has, even a pays has many subsidiary, if that's a word in English, locations or ways of speaking or ways of expressing oneself. So le pays seems to be a larger word than countries, even countryside.
How about universe?
It doesn't work for me.
Okay. But that is one phrase that you're focused in on. What about when you are working professionally? Do you find that you think of it in French and then translate into English and find the best words? Or are you thinking in English?
I am probably thinking more in English because when I was working with clients, they were English speaking most of the time. That was their primary language. So that's how I understood something about what they were saying, and I would play it back to them to check it out. I make no assumptions whatsoever. I check it out.
And when you learned how to do what you do, were you in an English school or a French school? Your professional training.
I want to say yes to both, because I read a lot in French. Originally, I read the philosophers and the playwrights in French. And when I went to school, my return to school was Santa Monica City College, which is English speaking. And I took a class in philosophy, and the teacher spoke in English.
Well, you've had more training than that, though. Where did you go to school after Santa Monica College?
I was in Santa Monica College for a while, took quite a few classes, and then I went to Antioch University and somewhere else in between, and I don't remember. Je ne sais plus.
Je ne what?
Je ne sais plus. Which means I don't remember.
So je ne sais quoi is I don't know, and je ne sais plus is I don't remember?
Je ne sais plus means I something like that, yes. It's a little different. And that's what I'm saying to you, is that sometimes the translation is just a little bit different, but it's not very big. But it's enough.
Some of that can be just personal. I mean,
could be.
If you say a word to me and my experience of that word is over there, but your experience of that word is over there, then we may be meaning slightly different things and think we're saying the same thing. And it has nothing to do with English or French. It's just our life experience.
Yes, can be.
I want to thank you for being on my show. And for those listeners who just joined us at the end, you know, these are all archives. You can go back and listen to the whole thing. My guest today was Jatan. She is a producer here at KDRT. What is the name of your program, Mindy?
Heart to Heart with Dr. G. And it was a radio man who started calling me Dr. G. And it stuck with me. You would walk into WFLA, and that was a time when the men cultivated their voice, so it would be deep, and his voice was at depth, and he'd say, "Hi there, Dr. G." Somehow it stuck with me.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. G, for having been on my show.
You're welcome. Bienvenue.
You are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 here in Davis, California.